You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us.
On today's podcast, I talk about what's going on in China with regards to worldview, how they are tightening up on the Christian church there, specifically in a couple of particular provinces, but as a whole, Christianity is spreading like wildfire in China, and the Communist Party there does not like it. And for our main topic, I talk about some very basic, very practical preparedness steps. And these steps are geared to reduce stress, make you more resilient, and to turn those emergencies that occur in our lives into mere inconveniences. On today's Worldview segment, I cover an article that was written by AP. It's posted here on Yahoo News, and the title is China Tightens Church Control Ahead of Christmas. And the article says this. It says, 2 days before Christmas, members of a rural Christian congregation in eastern China welded pieces of metal into a cross and hoisted it onto the top of a worship hall to replace one that was forcibly removed in October. Within an hour, township officials and uniformed men barged onto the church ground and tore down the cross. All right, and it goes on to say that basically in many places in China, they're cracking down on Christianity and the spread of it. And because it is spreading so fast, the authorities are feel threatened by it. And that's kind of the gist of the article. There's estimated somewhere between 23 million and 100 million Christians in China. And the ruling Communist Party doesn't like this kind of growth. So as Christians, we should be encouraged that the gospel is on the march in China. And we should be praying for our brothers and sisters over there because they are under intense persecution. And I'm not just talking about tearing down a cross above a church. They're jailing people and really trying to put a lid on Christianity. What I find ironic about all of this is that the church in America, largely, of course, there's always exceptions, is largely oblivious to persecution that is occurring among Christian brothers and sisters around the world. Intense persecution, not just China, but many places in the Middle East as well. But at the same time, America was founded largely on religious liberty, or at least that was one of the founding principles of how this country started. At the same time, we are losing our religious liberty as our brothers and sisters are fighting for it, to gain it in many places around the world. We are letting it slip away, and we are not even aware of what is occurring around us. So my point in this is that we do need to be aware of these things. We do need to be looking at China. We do need to be looking at Middle East. But if we don't wake up, then we will be sitting in a very similar position right here in the United States. For today's main topic, I want to discuss preparedness, and I want to do it on a very basic level. I want to do it on an action step level. And I'm calling this one 11 steps to preparedness because when I sat down and wrote it all out, I thought of 11 steps. Okay, so there's many more, but these are just 11 basic steps that you can take to increase your preparedness and to do so with very little money. Okay, so I've picked very simple things that you can do that will help you to become more prepared. And that begs the question, why should we become more prepared? Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. Number one is it reduces stress in your life. Okay, if you're prepared for emergencies, you're not going to be as stressed out. It makes you more resilient. So when things do happen, it's not a big blow. It's not just the fact that, okay, you didn't stress out about it. It's that it doesn't impact your life so heavily. Okay, so not everything, of course, but a lot of the small things, a lot of the most likely things will not impact your life so heavily. So you're more resilient. All right, and then when we encounter emergencies, a lot of times when we are prepared, they're actually not emergencies anymore. They're more like, okay, that was an inconvenience. Okay, so I'll use an example that I've used before, and it's the $1,000 vehicle repair. Okay, the $1,000 vehicle repair is, that would be a dire emergency for many people. Well, for those that are prepared, and that would have, say, an emergency fund, even if it's not a huge emergency fund, that's no longer an emergency. It's like, oh, that's frustrating. My emergency fund has now dwindled down, but I can take care of this $1,000 repair, and on I go about, you know, about my life. Okay, so that's why I want to talk about preparedness, and then today is just a very practical look at preparedness. This is not... What I'm not talking about today is significant events. I'm not talking about societal collapse or a banking crisis or the zombie apocalypse or the Carrington event in 2015. That's not what I'm talking about. These are basic action steps that you can take. So let me start with giving you Proverbs 27:12, and it says, "The prudent see danger and take refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it." Okay, so let's talk about preparedness and the action steps that go along with preparedness. Again, this is not philosophy or principles behind it, but more so just action steps. So the first one is this: assess how you spend your money and what you eat. And this becomes very important later on, and it's a great thing to do regardless of what we're talking about today, but it absolutely ties into preparedness as well. Because when you look at what you're spending your money on and what you're eating, it impacts your preparedness. Okay, preparedness is simply just how you live your life in a manner that's resilient. So 50 years ago, this was a way of life. Today, when you talk about preparedness, a lot of people think you're crazy, you're a tinfoil hat wearer. Okay, it's just how you live your life. I mean, you know, we should prepare for the unknown. Now, there's the unknown and the unknowable, and of course, that is going to be a part of life, and we cannot prepare for every single contingency that we can think of. But we can prepare in a general manner. So the first thing is, and it costs nothing, assess how you spend your money and what you eat. All right, because I think most of us, if we were honest, if somebody were to ask us, say, hey, you know, well, what do you spend your money on? And, you know, what do you eat? Talking about your health and, you know, your financial health and your physical health, we would all probably give an answer because we think that we're doing better than we actually are. Okay, that's just true if we're honest about it. I mean, if we think, well, how much money do you spend outside of the home? You know, for someone who's going to work every day, it might be, well, how much money do you spend on lunches, on different, you know, buying snacks throughout the day, you know, whatever. And we'd probably say, well, no, not that much, not that much at all. Well, this is why I want you to track what you're spending and what you're eating. Because I think for most of us, it's more than we think, okay? And it's an easy way to become more prepared is tracking those types of things, because later on, you can spend less, you can eat healthier, and that's a big part of preparedness is just being financially and physically healthy, okay? So that's the first thing, just track it. I didn't say start cutting all your expenses and, you know, doing this, or, you know, start get on a diet and you need to eat healthy. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying simply assess, simply track it. Because if you do that, you will likely make some, at least some small changes that will improve your situation. Okay, so assess it. The second thing is assess your environment. Okay, what is most likely in your area? All right, not across the board, not, you know, the Yellowstone volcano that's going to destroy everything within, you know, 200 miles of it in your area. So for me, for example, in northern Idaho, I'm not worried about hurricanes. I'm not worried about typhoons. Okay, not going to happen. I'm a long ways away from the ocean. But am I going to worry about ice storms? Am I going to be worried about being snowed in? Absolutely. Am I going to be worried about frequent, or at least not frequent necessarily, but loss of power that could be for several days, maybe a week, 2 weeks, about getting snowed in where I can't leave my home for 2 weeks? Absolutely. Those kinds of things are quite possible where I'm at. Okay, so that's what I would want you to do. And again, this costs nothing. Assess your area. What is most likely in your area? Third is develop a communications plan. And what I mean by this is within your family, everyone understands that during an emergency, what to do. Okay, so it may be to contact one another via text. That might be your primary means of communication. And if you can't do that, you know, you're gonna try and get to a landline and call. And if you can't do that, then you have a meeting place, and you have more than one meeting place. This is what I mean by communication. It could be verbally. It could be written. And there should be a no communications plan where you can't get a hold of them via voice or text, and then you have a plan to do that. Additionally, with that communications plan, you might have something like a point of contact outside of your area. Okay, so maybe it's your mom or your dad that's 300, 400, 500 miles away, that everyone knows, okay, if we can't get a hold of each other and we can't move, but for whatever reason, I can call out. I can't call around in the area, but I can get out, which is not unrealistic, and it's actually been proven to be the case more so. So you'll have a harder time communicating in a disaster area as opposed to calling out away from the disaster area. So everybody can call that single point of contact and pass information that way if for whatever reason you can't contact one another. Okay, and that's by no means comprehensive as far as communications, but that you have something. Okay, and even a simple plan is better than nothing. All right, the fourth action step. And again, up to this point, it hasn't cost any money, nothing. Just a little bit of planning and a whole lot more, being a whole lot more prepared. So the fourth action step is this: develop a fire plan for your home. Okay, so most people do not have a fire plan in their home. They don't think about it. They just think it's not going to happen to them. But you know what? It's one of the more likely disasters that can happen to you and in your life. So develop a fire plan. And what I mean by this is that you have a plan in place with you and your kids on what to do in case the fire alarm goes off or somebody senses a fire, that kind of thing. Okay? Down to how many fire extinguishers do you have in your home? Are they up to date? Are they in the green? Have you taught everyone how to access them? Have you asked your kids, where are the fire extinguishers? Show me what you would do if there was a fire and how you would use it. Where would you point it? You know, some basics like that. So it's a whole lot. I know it's simple to say, yeah, you pull the pin and push down on the lever and it'll go off. Well, have your children actually put their hands on it and go through a rehearsal. Okay, and And furthermore, that maybe that's for a small fire. And you know, what are you going to do for a kitchen fire? Do your kids and everyone else know where the baking soda is located? Do you have baking soda available for a kitchen fire? You know, simple things like this that most people know, but if you don't have that actually prepared, it's going to be hard to do when that time happens. And it could be as simple as a fire in the stove from, say, something that spilled over in the oven. Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to get out the fire extinguisher and blast it in the oven, or are you going to put some baking soda in there and put it out? Okay, so make sure everyone in the house knows where all the fire extinguishers are. And this could be every couple months, you go through a verbal quiz. Okay, where is the fire extinguisher located downstairs? And hopefully somebody can tell you right where it's located. And occasionally tell them to go get it. Okay, this is simple rehearsals that during a fire when there's smoke and, it's dark, there's no power, that unless they've rehearsed that, they're not going to find it. Okay. Now, if it's bad enough, then obviously the plan is to get out of the house. So that's another thing you got to think about. Does everyone have a means to get out of the house? Does everyone have a way to get off of a second story? Do you have a way to get out of your room? Do your kids have a way to get out of their room? Besides that, their bedroom door. Okay, so that make sure you think through that. Do an assessment. Look, walk through and go, okay, how would you get out of here if you came up here, touched the door, it's hot, you're staying low, right? Just how they're taught. Well, what are you going to do? And they say, well, I would exit my bedroom window. Okay, well, look at it. What if it's 15 feet down? All right, do you want them jumping out of there? You have some type of a rope ladder, something. Okay, so think through a fire plan. This is a fire in your home is more likely than you know, some of these major events that we like to prepare for. Sometimes it's an excuse for us to buy certain things. Okay, so come up with a fire plan. The fifth step. Now, yeah, okay, so let me just go back real quick on number four, develop a fire plan. If you have to buy smoke detectors, if you have to buy fire extinguishers, do it. It's a small insurance plan that will maybe save your home. And also talk through those type of scenarios. At what point do you want them? Do you want your family members to fight a fire? And what point do you want them to just leave the house? Okay, so I mean, obviously you want to err on the side of caution here, but there is some point in like, hey, if it's a pretty small fire, I want it fought. Okay, I don't want to lose my entire home just because, you know, the curtains caught on fire. And we just bailed out because we just saw a fire and we never thought through these types of things. Okay, so on to number five, build a home emergency kit. Okay, this is something for in the home. Okay, I'm not talking about bug out bags. I'm not talking about go bags. This could be a plastic bin of some kind that everyone knows where it's at. It's simple. It's got things in it like a first aid kit. It's got things in it like flashlights. It's got things in it like extra batteries. Okay, this is what some people would call a blackout kit. It's when the power goes out, you go get this box. All right, it may have the LED lanterns or just flat, like I said, flashlights and a first aid kit, all right? Some basics in there. And I'm not talking about surgical kits and high-speed IFACs and all this kind of stuff. I'm talking about Band-Aids and antiseptic and maybe some basic over-the-counter type medications. Not that I want to use all that kind of junk, but there is a time and a place for it, okay? So Motrin and any type of allergy medicine, basics for Band-Aids and and stuff for sprained ankles. You know, just basic. This is a home emergency kit. And what I like about it is it's the one place that you go. It's the place you go if you're trying to bandage up a small wound. It's the place you go if the power goes out. So everybody kind of knows where it's at. It's not tucked away somewhere in a closet. And then, you know, when the power goes out twice a year, then we got to think about it and figure out where it's at. The place that's gone a little bit more frequently than that. And another thing that you can do is, because like I said, if the power goes out, you'll want to be able to break out this bin and give yourself some breathing room. And if you can break out the bin and all of a sudden you got all these flashlights that are working and the LED lantern and some tea lights and whatever else that you want in there, you're going to be okay. You're not going to panic. You're not going to like figure out, okay, where's the flashlight and everything else. Now, here's another thing. Everyone in your home should have a means to where if they were anywhere in the house, they should be able to have some kind of light to get to that kit, okay, or outside, or whatever the case may be. And this is what I mean by that. Some kind of light. What we like and what everyone in my house has is those little LED lights, those little pressure LED lights that cost like $250. And we've got them on keychains, and people each have them on you know, their zippers or whatever else. Everybody's got one. And so, boom, the lights go out, and everybody's pushing the little button, and they can at least see to get to either the emergency kit, the home emergency kit, or whatever the case may be. Okay, so it's very simple. All of our keychains have one. Everybody personally has one. Everybody probably has, you know, a flashlight by their bed. I certainly do, and that should be part of your everyday carry, okay? So you have a way to see real quick. Now, a lot of people, you know, use their phones. That's fine. You know, whatever you want to use, as long as somebody, you have something, you have a way to see quickly. All right, so that's number five. So build that home emergency kit. You may have to spend a little bit of money here, but that's okay. Okay, it's not very expensive to outfit in a home emergency kit. Number six, build a 72-hour bug out bag. This is the bag that if you have to leave, this is the bag that if there was a fire in your home and it was no longer inhabitable. Okay, this is that if there is a fire, that somebody would be able to grab this quick, put it on their back, get out the house, and you've at least got 3 days worth of supplies. Okay, so what should go in here? Well, there's lots of different thoughts on that. A lot of people want to pack everything in the kitchen sink. That's not what I'm talking about. And I'm not talking about this is the bag that you're going to go and march into the wilderness and then survive. That's not what I'm talking about. This is really basic. This is what everybody has, a change of clothes. Maybe it's a beanie and some gloves. This is 3 days worth of food for the family. Okay, this is that kind of a bag. This is it that if you had to go over to a friend's house and stay in their basement, that you could subsist. So it's got some basic hygiene, an extra pair of clothes, and a little bit of food, so you're not just coming and mooching off someone else, which is fine. I'm sure you have friends and family that this is not a problem, but you're prepared just in case that if you had to, you could survive for 72 hours. Now, you need to outfit this for your entire family. Okay, so this is a 72-hour subsistence for your entire family, however big your family is. This is something that you can grab and go. Okay, so if maybe, I don't even care, if you want to put it in one of those big roller suitcases, fine. If you've got a big family, maybe you got to put it in that and you can grab it, throw it in a vehicle, and boom, you've got your 72-hour kit right there and you can hit the road. If you need to, this is, maybe there's a, a fire, a forest fire that's coming through, and you got barely any notice, and it's like, hey, you got to go. We're mandatory evacuation, go. And so you do that. You got your 72-hour kit. Now, just on a side note, for those of you that have animals, okay, and I'm not just talking a cat and a dog. I'm talking farm animals. You need to have a plan for this as well. This is getting a little bit deeper than what I wanted to, but just think through that. How would you – it's the same thing. Do you have 72 hours for all your animals? And do you have a way – it's like maybe you have a plan. You're going to hook up your trailer real quick. You're going to put your dairy cow and calf in there and your two goats and your flock of chickens, and you've got 72 hours worth of food for all of it. Yeah, I don't know. You know, or maybe you need to think through that and go, okay, I just cannot do that. If I had to leave now and if I had 5 minutes, then you need to prioritize and think through who you're bringing. Okay. Obviously your family, but are you bringing any animals or are you leaving them? Or if you can only take some, because some people can only take some, what are you going to take? Who are you going to take? Okay. So think through that. So that is number six. So it's 72 hours worth of subsistence for everyone and all your animals if you're bringing animals, okay? Number seven, this is especially for those that are in cold climates. Develop, and I don't care how you do it, a backup source of heat. All right, this could be propane, it could be kerosene, it could be installing a wood stove. There's however you decide to do it. It could be running a small space heater off of a battery. And although that's not, I don't recommend that. But however you want to do it, develop a backup source of heat. Like I said, especially for cold climates. And, you know, just think through it. You know, you don't need to have a backup heat source to heat your entire home. Have a backup heat source that can heat a room or you know, two rooms. So, you know, think through that and have the appropriate, you know, you get into some real cold climates, just putting on a sweater is not going to cut it. You know, just, you know, even bundling up in a sleeping bag is not going to cut it. You have to be able to work. And the likelihood is that you'll end up leaving that home. If it's really cold and you don't have a backup heat source, you're probably going to leave. And you don't want to have to do that. Okay, there may be reasons why you don't want to leave. So develop that backup source of heat. And again, doesn't matter how you do it. Okay, number eight. Develop a backup source of power. And I don't mean to power your entire home. And I don't even mean to power a significant portion of your home. Okay? And again, however you want to do this, there's lots of ways to do it. You can have a generator. And you can power, you know, create power that way. You can have a couple solar panels and an inverter. You could have just a couple of batteries that you charge every now and again and keep them charged up, that and an inverter, and that's your way for your backup source of power. And that's going to give you, you know, depending on what you're trying to run off of it, that could give you quite a bit of emergency power. You know, if maybe you're just trying to power to be able to recharge cell phones or a laptop and a cell phone. Okay, it doesn't take a whole lot to do that. So you can get a couple of deep cell batteries and be able to do it that way. You can also get an inverter and run it off your vehicle. Okay, this is another good backup source of power. Okay, so however you want to do it, have something. I mean, just the basics. If you just want to start very simple, figure out something, the way that you can charge a phone and a computer. Okay. If you can do that, you're ahead of most people out there. All right. The next practical step, number 9 here, is develop a simple food storage. Okay, and I'm not talking about buying a pallet of MREs or buying freeze-dried foods or anything like that. I'm talking very simple. I'm talking what do you eat right now? What does your family eat right now? And start to stock up a little bit on that, just a little bit at a time. So a great way that people will, just about any preparedness-minded individual organization will recommend is copy canning. Okay, and what they mean by that is that when you go to the store and you buy cans of food, let's say it's canned vegetables, canned tomatoes and potatoes and green beans, is that you realize, and part of this is, if you remember, the first step is assessing what you eat, okay, and that includes writing down everything you eat at home. If you realize, oh, hey, I eat a lot of canned green beans, I eat a lot of canned potatoes, well, start buying extra canned green beans and extra canned potatoes. Okay, so your goal is to copy can and start building not only a deep pantry, okay, but a limited food storage. And that's, you know, whatever your comfort level. And again, part of that is the assessment of where you live. What is most likely in your area? Like I said before, for us, we could get snowed in for a week or 2 weeks. Okay, so for us, it would make sense to have a food storage. So copy canning is a very simple first step in a food storage. And you can pretty quickly work your way up to having a couple weeks of food simply by copy canning. Okay, and so and then think through that a little bit. I didn't put this as an action step, but working through ways to cook and making sure that what you're storing that you can store without power. And remember, I said develop a backup source of heat, develop a backup source of power. You should think through all those things. Okay, a beautiful backup source of heat would be a wood cook stove, for example, where you could cook on it as well as heat your home. Okay, so develop food storage. I'm not going to sit here and tell you how much or how long, other than to think through that. And again, these are simple action steps. These are beginner action steps. Maybe it's 2 weeks. Okay, so if you were to go to FEMA websites and the like, and you would find anywhere from 3 days worth of food to up to 10 days or 2 weeks worth of food, depending on which agency you looked at. So you determine that for yourself and your family. I would recommend at least 2 weeks just as a starting point. Okay. Next step, number 10, is water storage. Develop water storage. And again, this, you don't have to. What I'm not talking about here is thousands of gallons, and you're putting in ponds, and that's your backup source, and you have rainwater catchment, and you have cisterns, and okay, basic steps here. This is the first step. So I do encourage you to do those things for other reasons as well as emergencies. They're great for irrigation and creating ways of growing food and all that. But today, what I'm talking about is simple water storage. And a very easy way to do it would be to take old 2-liter bottles of soda. And if you don't drink soda, great. Then find somebody who does and get their old 2-liter bottles of plastic bottles of soda. When they're empty, you can clean them out, wash them out real well, get a bunch of those, fill them up with water, put that lid on, and you've got yourself some water storage. And a rule of thumb generally is 1 gallon of water per day per person. Okay, and then again, I'm not going to tell you how much to store, but I would say at least a couple of weeks worth. Now, although that adds up quick, if you don't want to do that much, you know, then at least 3 days worth. Okay, so you can do the math on that. But develop a water storage. trade that out every now and again. Okay, every 60 days or however much you want to. Now, water doesn't go bad, but the threat there is that if bacteria gets into the water. Okay, so trade that out. Set a calendar reminder. It could be the first of the month. You go ahead and trade it all out, and all that water you stored goes into your garden. You refill it back up, put it back under your bed, and you're set. Okay, you don't have to have a special storage area for it. Just find a place where you can do it. I also recommend that you have some type of filtration system. So some type of water filter so that, let's say that you have a power outage and it lasts 5 days, and before you know it, you're just about out of your own water storage because you stored 3 days, and you're having to get some water from some sources that are not 100%. Well, you can filter that, you know, as well as boil it if you've got your extra source of power and heat. But anyways, get a filter. I would really recommend that because you can come up with. There's some great filters out there. So we like Berkey. Just as an example, there's lots of them that are just as good. Well, at least there's a few out there that are just as good. You could take pond water. You could take puddle water from the street and put it in a Berkey, and it's going to come out clean. Okay, I'm not have that much confidence in a Berkey or a Berkey-type filter. So I would recommend that. There's also those great, you can buy these for like $15. Just look it up on Amazon or some other place like that. That fit into your bathtub. They're basically just like a plastic container that folds up. You can put it in your bathtub, fill it up, and you got quite a bit of water storage right there. Okay, and a lot of times, even if you lose power, if you're on city water, you may have pressure for a while. Okay, so take advantage of that. You know, fill up your bathtub in one of those containers that has a sealed top, because a lot of times people will just say, well, I'll just fill up my bathtub. Well, that's fine. That's a good plan too. But if things are, they go haywire due to storms or flooding or whatever, a lot of times water can back up and into your bathtub. And now you've got a fouled water, you know, gallons of water in your bathtub. So I'd recommend getting one of those plastic containers that basically fit into any bathtub, and I think you can get up to some of them like 100 gallons that way. So that's a great way to do it, very simply, or at least, you know, in conjunction with your 2-liter bottles of water. And so if you have an emergency, one of the first things that should occur is you're filling up those type of containers. All right, so that was number 10, and then number 11. A very practical step, and that is to learn a new skill. Pick a skill and learn it. And I'm not talking about something extravagant. I'm talking about a basic preparedness skill. I don't care if it's changing your own oil, or if maybe you don't even change your own tires if you get a flat tire. Learn how to change a tire. Do a whole lot of cooking, unless it's prepared type foods or processed type foods. Learn how to cook from scratch. Learn how to take and buy bulk grains and cook with it. Okay, so maybe you have your own grain mill that you learn that process, or maybe you learn how to make butter, or maybe you're going to learn how to shoot a firearm. Okay, anything like that that's going to help you in an emergency type situation. Maybe it's learning how to build an emergency power system with something as simple as having a deep cell battery, making sure it's charged up at all times, and then learning how to use that. Or maybe it's buying a simple inverter and learning how to run it off your vehicle and be able to have emergency power that way. So whatever it is, pick a skill and learn it. So that would be the the 11th very practical step that you can take and be more prepared. And a lot of this that we talked about takes very little money, but will take you a long way in your preparedness journey. And so remember, we prepare to reduce stress and we prepare to become more resilient and we prepare to deal with emergencies and turn those emergencies into simple inconveniences. All right, that covers 11 very practical steps that you can take. You have no excuses. Our scripture for today, Proverbs 27:12. The prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple go on and suffer for it. This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.